This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 12th of July, 2021. John Hardy here, back from a week on holiday, and it's pretty much going to be me solo for the next 3 weeks. Just a warning for you listeners out there, although we'll have guests on occasion, especially hoping to get our Chief Investment Officer, Stane Jakobsen, on the call at least a couple of times over the next 3 weeks. But I'll do my best to cover across asset classes. And we had a pretty interesting week last week while I was away, especially, of course, in FX with the Japanese yen. Been looking for that move to sort of develop potentially. With this decline we've seen in U.S. yields, that decline taking, sort of accelerating last week on the narrative and some support for that narrative that this reflation trade slash, especially the pace of the economic comeback, is slowing a bit. And I'll get to that in a moment. For now, let's slice and dice what's going on in markets here. On slide two, you can see our NASDAQ 100 on the left, the weekly chart there. Nice comeback on Friday from the weak Thursday session. You can see the performance of our various baskets there leading the way, stocks like e-commerce. A bit surprising to me, the commodity sector, number three there on the one-day performance thing on Friday. Bubble stocks, et cetera, really enjoying this backdrop, seemingly, of low yields, though we did see yields pick back up a little bit on Friday, also helping the Japanese yen back lower. I think it's a bit more interesting to consider where we are in broad terms with this U.S. equity market. And where we are is it's very rarefied atmosphere statistically. I just saw this one jumped out on me on Twitter I don't know who this is, at not Jim Cramer, puts up some pretty good charts. Have a follow there if you're interested in this series of charts. Pulled out two charts. The first one here showing the S&P 500 index, and this is basically a breadth problem. So what this stock is showing is that we're at new highs for the market itself, and this is led in many cases by the large cap stocks. But what we're seeing here is that the breadth is not great. So we have, as indicated on slide three here, and at not Jim Cramer's comments, assuming he's correct, which I hope he is, that we've got a new all-time high here with less than 50% of stocks above their 50-day moving average. So not only, relatively not at new highs, but not even above their 50-day moving average. Quite interesting there. And if you look at the previous data points, it's really, this is only the third cluster, if you will, and kind of interesting. And this is not some immediate warning that the equities are about to drop from this very day. Let's keep that in mind. Well, what happened the last times this occurred? Very small sample set, to say the least, but back in 1998, that was the final weeks before a very nasty drawdown into the LTCM crisis in 1998, triggered in part by the Russian default there into the fall before the Fed helped to clean that up. And that was basically set this whole modern string of the Fed bailing us out at every corner in motion. That was the most famous one in any case. And then in 99, going into the year 2000, we still saw the market running up, at least the pockets, the most speculative pockets of the market running up into the beginning of March in 2000. But it was a very remarkable market at the time. Basic value stocks were doing very poorly at that point in time. Traditional blue chip stocks were completely neglected, et cetera. And then this latest cluster here, which is basically within the recent couple of weeks. So just, I think it's a warning sign that we're in very rarefied atmosphere. People on a strategic level might be looking for some kind of pullback from where we are. It's not a healthy sign when you don't have decent breadth and support. And then I pulled out another chart as I was perusing a few charts on this at not Jim Cramer's Twitter account. And this one I think is very interesting. It's a theme that touches on a lot of what we've spoken about lately. The interest in whether we're seeing a handover into the value space from the growth space. And there seems to be somewhat similar to the 2000 experience. And that was actually ran all the way into 2002. Very, very different performance metrics and behavior and no correlation really between the value space and the traditional momentum and growth stocks. So we see here, this is a correlation on slide four, the chart from at not Jim Cramer showing the rolling 1-year correlation. And to say the least, it's a remarkable development. I think this is just a theme we've been discussing. This is just a good crystallization, a chart showing how these themes are playing out. And we're seeing a very big disconnect in how different pockets of the market are behaving. Now, as mentioned at the top there on, and actually speaking of equity markets, it was important support that was found on Friday in Japan, where we saw the 200-day moving average tested on the Nikkei at 225. And that rally off those lows was saw a really big gap higher into today's trading on the back of the strong U.S. performance late on Friday. So a really key line in the sand there for Japanese stocks. Have a look at your charts on the Nikkei 225 if you trade Japanese equities. And then on dollar yen, again, as noted, the slide in those long U.S. yields, this narrative developing and concerns that COVID variants are going to mean a much more sluggish recovery from here. We may have reached peak recovery, peak inflation concerns, et cetera. We finally, and again, this is something I've been looking at for quite some time back. I'm looking for a bigger yen correction. And we got one. And this one was more broad and that it also really hit dollar yen in a big way last week, as well as in the basic yen crosses across the board. So you can see here, this sort of sluggish rising channel has been broken. This is, slide five for the Japanese dollar yen chart, US dollar JPY. And we've pretty much broken that channel with this latest move. And a couple of other interesting things here being that the 111 price level, the sequence above there, pretty handily rejected now by this drawdown lower. This is the largest sell-off we've seen since that April experience there. Next steps here, though, for a more full breakdown, look at the Ichimoku cloud level. I think it's a really key technical indicator for Japanese traders. That's the sort of shaded area there, and it's thinner, so it should be less of a support than it has been when it's a thicker cloud in sort of cloud theory. And then you have the 61.8% retracement just above 109 there, the green line. So I would look for there, breaking below 109 to be an indication of a more thorough breakdown. And more on the yen strength side, in my view, than necessarily this being about dollar weakness. But it's just always interesting if the yen is taking over the leadership. And then looking elsewhere at the dollar in general, of course, with this focus on concerns about the outlook, we have the dollar rearing its ugly head again. And although we did see a sell-off on Friday, we're pulling into some key areas for resistance for the dollar. And in dollar pairs like Aussie dollar, especially, we've gotten to some really critical levels. So on slide six, you can see that we're down to this that previous major high from 2020 in late August, just above 74. That was taken out then in sort of late November, early December timeframe. And we traded above there from that timeframe all through this year with an unbearably sluggish price action for much of this year. And this is just a critical area. You can see the other sort of formation being a semi head and shoulders formation where we've been interacting with the neckline over the last couple of weeks here. So really critical stuff. I think if we're closing below 74, it's pointing us towards that massive zero spot 70 area to the downside. All right. What else do we have going on? Well, we have together with the lower U.S. yields, we have lower break-even inflation levels. It's a key metric for inflation fears, how the market is pricing these at least. And we see on slide seven here, this is a chart I've put up before where we have the black, blue, and brown being the 2, 5, and 10 respectively break-even levels. A little bit tough to tease out here, but you see that the two-year there, the black one, the uppermost one, which has been higher than the others, basically, for the balance of this year, is actually declined last week. It actually declined last week to new local lows. You're not seeing that. You're seeing more sideways actions of the fives and tens. But I think it's kind of interesting to see that sort of even the near-term inflation pricing coming out a bit. And directionally, all of this is sympathetic with the drop in long U.S. yields. But we finally got a sell-off in the Treasury market, a pretty chunky one on Friday. I think it's interesting timing as we're coming up with some the bigger cycle of June data points out of the U.S. This week. We also have some Treasury auctions up today. I'll get to that in a moment. So it looks like this 1.3% U.S. 10-year benchmark yield. You can see that at the green line on slide seven. Looks like a key area if we're going to find find support there for yields or resistance, if you will, on the recent Treasury rally. I think a really critical signal across markets. If U.S. yields are managing to go lower, it's really saying something about the market's concerns, forward concerns for the economy, et cetera. And then gold, you would expect maybe it might find better support on the drop in yields. It has risen, you know, reasonably from those 1750 area lows, but just not finding any further impulsivity last week. I think it's in part, although real U.S. yields have been falling on this drop in nominal yields, as well as break-evens, just that those break-evens are directionally going down. Inflation fears, especially again, the shorter time frame, concerns about the size of fiscal going forward, et cetera. It's just not providing the oomph that you would need to see, and of course, the dollar strength itself, that you would need to see a decent precious metals rally. So looking pretty topish here if we can't bust through this 200-day moving average, this 1825 to 1830 area. And I would argue structurally, we need to see it really pounding into the 1900 area to get something really remarkable going there. And you would probably need to see dollar weakness and maybe some new Fed switching back to an easing stance. And it's just too early in that process to get to those types of outcomes. Earnings is definitely picking up focus this week. The earnings overview provided by Peter Gonry from Friday's slide deck on slide 9. And it is generally the financials as usual that are out first out of the gates. They rebounded a bit on Friday with that tick back up in yields. So it'd be interesting to see what they're saying. I'm a bit curious on the credit side, what these banks are saying, especially a bank like Wells Fargo, which tends to be more Main Street focused. If credit is not picking up, that's an additional headwind to the economy if the fiscal side is not pulling its weight that it has since the pandemic broke out. But a couple of other interesting names reporting. You see a stock like Delta Airlines that I've highlighted on slide 9 there. That's a weekly chart going back a few years. It's been going down for a few months now and a bit more steeply over the last few weeks, as of course, especially on the international routes, there's concerns that this Delta variant is going to slow the recovery in things like travel. And then on that note, you have the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is expected to come out today and announcing a full normalization in terms of not requiring any more mandatory restrictions related to COVID. They have had this very considerable pickup in the case count, but it's the hospitalization count we need to look at. And while that has picked up, it is a small fraction of where it was over the winter episode and outbreak. So if that remains the case count rising, but hospitalizations falling far behind of previous episodes, this could provide some relief for this sector. We're certainly all hoping so. And then it's a fairly interesting week ahead on the calendar front, besides earnings picking up on the macro side of things. It's quite interesting. We have 3 and 10-year auctions today. Those could provide some further input on how the market demand is shaping up now that we've come down so far in yields in the U.S. Note the China trade balance data overnight. And then looking out the rest of the week, so the June CPI is, I guess, one of the premier data points of the week. Tomorrow in the U.S., looking especially for the trajectory of the month-on-month figures, whether that's picking up or the downside is continuing and to what degree in terms of the trajectory, especially if the core CPI fails to print a new high for the cycle. That could be interesting for sort of underlining some of the narrative that has come into view last week. And then we have Fed Chair Powell out testifying both on Wednesday and Thursday. And obviously this is usually taken by lawmakers as a chance to sort of do a lot of posturing on politics, but it always bears close watching. And then finally for the week, the U.S. June retail sales is interesting to again, see any potential for the fading stimulus effect from the checks and to what degree pent-up demand from lockdowns, et cetera, is continuing to offset that and to what degree. All right. That was a quick rundown of what is going on and what we're looking forward to this week. And that is a wrap for today. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully with a guest, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.